for millennia. It's like a desert where the feet of our turbines have been put in. They've almost become incubation areas. So you get small langoustine, lobsters, crab growing there. And for them, the tide brings the food to them every 6 hours back and forth, and it becomes a great incubator area. And as they get bigger, too big, they sort of flush out. So there is some anecdotal evidence that actually it's helping the biodiversity of the area and even the take for the local fishermen, the lobster fishermen and so on. But that hadn't been the intention when we started this. It hadn't been the intention to do it. So we're now looking at that as a potential benefit of tidal turbines as well.
Tidal energy, tides and waves are an actual resource. They are an energy resource, aren't they?
Huge. Absolutely massive resource, and it's global as well. There's tidal resource on every continent on the planet, and unlike solar and wind power, sometimes the sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow, but the tide you can rely on. It runs every 6 hours, you know when it's coming, and it's the only absolutely dependable and predictable source of renewable energy.
It's actually the lunar power.
It is. It's also, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a lunar power rather, as opposed to a solar power.
Simon Forrest is founder and CEO of Nova Innovation. We'll link to Nova and its projects in the Shetlands and the Bay of Fundy at greenplanetmonitor.net. Conferences are fun, lots of interesting people to meet and sessions to attend. Better still, heading out into the field, especially if it's North Holland. That's where I went this past Friday on a bus trip organized by the Dutch Energy from Water Association together with 40 ocean energy innovators from around the world. Our first stop, Den Helder, at the manufacturing facility of Symphony Wave Power to see their wave energy demonstrator. Fred Gardner is Symphony's founder. Where are we now?
This is the town of Den Helder. And it's actually where our naval fleet is. So that's the main thing here in Den Helder. And there is quite some industry on oil and gas, because they have a lot of ships that are supplying to the oil and gas industry here. So it's a real North Sea harbour. And these kind of industries where we are now, they normally, you will see that in the workshop, they're doing building platforms for the oil and gas. And one of their things was that they see that things are changing in the world, and they wanted to have a new future into renewable energy. So we came in contact, and the owner, I can show you him, it's Pim. He really made, it's a family business here, and they, as a family, they said, we want to go into renewables. And they chose wave energy, because that is very close to what they were doing already. They know the sea, they know the maintenance at sea, and they see a big business for wave energy.
And it's easy to retool? It is easy to retool the...
Nothing is easy in this business, but they understand what's happening at sea. So if we say it's complicated, they say you have no idea how complicated it is. And then then we need welders, but so they actually have to downrate a little bit, because the oil and gas is much more dangerous than doing renewable energy. There's no harm in what we are doing. Nothing can explode, nothing can pollute, you know. We don't even have oil in the system. So if the ship would really wreck the system, there will be no environmental pollution or anything.
Can you introduce yourself? Tell me your name.
Yes, I'm Fred Gardner. I'm the founder of this new technology, Symphony Wave Power. And we are developing this technology together with industry and science. So we're on the road. We're doing things and testing things. And we have a lot, and I will explain. We have already 30 years of experience in wave energy. We have done things before. So this is the third kind of device, learning from the ones we built previous. It's a third kind of device we are building now and going to test. This is the turbine. Actually, only this top part is the turbine. This is the generator. Yeah? For those... No, it's closed. So the bottom is on there. And what you see here is liquid coming in, liquid going out. What we did here was to, with these two vessels, we could put liquid in and could pressurize it and then could run it in one direction. So the liquid came from one vessel to the other vessel, and both vessels contain air as well, so they create as a spring. So we run 3 or 4 seconds in one direction, and then we run 3 or 4 seconds in the other direction. And what we did is we have a valve here. We can open it, then it doesn't build up pressure. We can close it, and it will build up as much pressure as you want. So we could really run it for long periods of time, just as it will be running in the device. And yeah, there we learned a lot. So this device has been taken apart many times, small improvements, built together again. And now we are really happy with what it is doing. Yeah?
What's the difference between a North Sea wave and an ocean wave?
Ocean waves have a very long distance to develop. So if you have a wave in Portugal, it can come from the Antarctic or from Greenland. Those waves are 20 seconds and very long. North Sea waves is just wind waves. They develop on 300-500 kilometer distance, and they're much shorter.
So what's the difference in terms of the energy that you can get out of a North Sea wave versus an ocean wave?
The ocean waves can contain up to megawatts of energy. Can be 1,000 times as more than on the North Sea.
Because they've got very long frequencies.
Yeah, because the energy it goes by the cube of the period and linear, and by the square of the height. So you can imagine that is. So I have no idea how to go here.
So the tour ends here.
So we have to climb over now.
The open
is dicht. Yeah.
So a North Sea wave.
Ah, maar we kunnen hier door. Nee, we kunnen hier door. Ik dacht, ik wist niet dat deze open was.
Kijk, maar gaat nou open.
Okay.
So a North Sea wave is much shorter.
Much shorter. It's just 9 meters long. It's to 30 meters, about that distance. And an ocean wave can be 200 meters.
So why do you prefer to put your wave converter in the North Sea versus in the ocean?
Well, the energy is more or less, but your device can be is much more efficient. So your device goes up much faster, and any power you take out is velocity times force. So you can take with a small device, you can get more energy out. But if you would go to the Atlantic Ocean, you can take the same device, but it will produce less because the waves are longer. So only if you size up the device again, then we'll be in the right working window for the ocean. And the other thing is, it's cheaper. You know, you can build a smaller device, and you can learn tremendously lot while there is already a first market. That's why we choose for the North Sea.
And how much energy do you get out of a single device floating, bobbing up and down in the North Sea?
25 kilowatts on an average. Be careful, people. Be careful. There are pipes laying here.
And so the huge engineering challenge is synchronizing the wave motion with the.
Yeah, actually, the huge is getting maintenance low. You know, we know how to do it. We know how to make the device move. Okay, let's just look here. Guys, here we have the first part.
Now, this has all been engineered by people from the oil and gas industry, which is amazing. I mean,
yeah.
All these oil and gas workers have their skills.
Yeah.
It's interesting. This is a transition from oil and gas to renewable.
Absolutely, absolutely. And especially if you're going to work on high pressures and certification process, they know all about it. And we had to learn that, you know.
I mean, it's sort of encouraging to know that all these people who've been working, engineers
they
and
really
mechanics
like
in the oil and gas industry, they can transition to renewables.
And they like to do it because even the people here, they know all about this project. Everyone that's working here knows about the project. And they love that they are not just working on oil and gas and fossil fuels, that they work on renewables. That increases their motivation to work on these kind of projects.
Does it?
Yes, yes. You can ask the people. They all love the project.
What do they love about it?
Well, that you're working on the future, that you're providing us with clean energy.
I wonder, if we were to take away 30% of the weight of those steel things and make it durable enough,
yeah,
would that have a positive or negative effect on the output of the equipment?
The weight is totally unimportant because we will compensate with the pressure. Yeah.
Okay. So it doesn't.
This is the liquid. And here is our control cabinet. Yeah. So here will be the equipment. Then when we start doing first tests on the ships, but here as well, if we stand outside, the equipment will be in here and the control personnel will be in here. So we have the containers already in place to do that kind of work. Yeah.
Fred Gardner is the founder of Symphony Wave Power in Den Helder, North Holland. We will link to Symphony and to the town of Den Helder at greenplanetmonitor.net. Forms of energy readily available to coastal communities around the world, none is more intriguing than salt. To be precise, salt gradients. Wherever fresh river water flows into salty ocean, that fresh water gets infused with sodium, calcium, chloride, and sulfate ions. Salt gradients form. Make this happen across a plastic membrane. Under controlled conditions, you generate electricity. Reverse electrodialysis. It's called. No better place to see this magic in action, indeed the only place, than the Afsluit Dike. Check it out on a map. It's that long highway built on a dike between the Dutch provinces of North Holland and Friesland, separating the freshwater IJsselmeer from the salty Waddenzee. Right in the middle of the Afsluit Dike, a company called Red Stack is bringing fresh and salt water together and putting electricity into the Dutch grid. RED stands for Reverse Electrodialysis. The first voice you'll hear here is Peter Schijgrond, chairman of the Dutch Energy from Water Association, our tour leader this past Friday. Then Rick Siebers, Red Stack's managing director, and Michael van Ostrom, head of market development.
There's 90 turbines here. Each turbine is 4.3 megawatts. So in total, the installed capacity is around 360 megawatts. And that's good for 500,000 households. And it's been built under the financing of the utility company Eneco. So it is shallow water here. We're talking about maximum 5 meters water depth. And it's protected because it's the lake, so you only get very small waves. But it is offshore. It is a lake situation. So in front of us, I can already see the Redstedt plant, and it's a blue metal building on the right-hand side, very near the roadside. And you will also see a construction that goes over the bridge, and that is taking the water from the Waddenzee side into the factory. And on the right hand side, if you look well, you see a yellow pole in the water here, and the yellow pole is the intake of the fresh water. So I'll repeat again when the bus passes. So we're right in front now. You see here the yellow plant with Redsted logo. It says Blue Energy on top, and you see all the tanks. And on the right hand side, you see the yellow intake for fresh water. And we're driving with the bus right now under the pipes that take it in.
We have, when the water, normally I go out and then we follow the water flow in, and enter then the building. But because we have to split up in two groups, we let the water enter here and we use the drum filters. You know all the drum filters, I think, which is sieving material. But there's not so very good and not so very convenient for the system of gaining blue energy and filtering the water, because there are shell rests in the water which damage the drum filters. That's why we use now the sand filter, rapid sand filters. But I'll show you outside when we go outside. Mm-hmm. But when we go, when we follow the water, we have salt water and we have fresh water. We filter the water nowadays outside, and we, this is the tube where we gain the filtered salt water. On the other side, we have a same tube with 30 cube of water, but then filtered fresh water. And this is the material that we use for our process. We take the water from this and from that side and go to the stacks. And this is the heart. When you follow me, please. This is the heart of the installation. This is one of the bigger stacks, laboratory stacks. It's not the form that we use now and we sell now. You see here a stack with about 500 cell pairs, 50-50, 50 centimeters by 50 centimeters. And this is the one that produces about 500 watts. The energy that we gain, we bring it to the grid, to the public grid. And we use sun collector items, which we transformed for this energy. So we produce blue energy for the grid, not so much. And Michael told already, this is not a production location, this is a test location. We make small stacks, I'll show you later on. When they're successful, then we scale it up like this. When it's not successful, then we know why it's not successful, and we don't scale it up because we have to be careful with our money, of course.
This is like an open lab here.
It's an open lab. It's a lab.
Yeah, that's one of those things. How does it work?
It's a secret system.
It's salinity gradient, so it takes the difference between salt water and fresh water. And you know that when you have two cups of water, one salt, one fresh, and you put them together, it automatically mixes. The law of physics and of entropy, it wants to merge automatically. If you do put membranes in between that are ion selective, you can actually force the positive and the negatively charged ions to go only in one direction while the water still mixes. But you can build a power source like that. You can do that on a small scale, and as I explained, you go bigger and bigger. So running through a stack, one side in the inlet with fresh water and the other one with salt water, you can make a power source. So put a load on it, and then you generate electricity.
And are you actually putting electricity into the grid at this moment?
Not at the moment, because we have no pumping capacity, because the contractors are busy with the dike. But when we have the installation in operation, then yes.
It is grid connected.
It's grid connected by those black instruments.
And when will you start to put electricity into the grid? When will you start actually putting electricity into the grid?
We already did.
We are in operation for about six years now.
At the moment, there's some renovation taking place, so that limits their moments of having the pumps on. Right,
and
on the other side.
And when that's ready and we're in operation again, then we put our blue energy again in the grid.
How much?
Here, this was developed for and designed for 50 kilowatts max, but we didn't reach that yet.
But you're planning on scaling up to the megawatt?
Yeah, scaling up is costly because we have a pilot location. So when we have one stack in operation running well, then we know we can scale up by multiplying the stacks, not enlarging the stacks endlessly, but it's a modular system. So when you make a large installation, you need a large amount of stacks. Any volunteer for making blue energy?
For sure.
Yep. Then you have to turn the two cranes. Then the seawater and the river water flows to the little stack here. It takes a little while to build up the voltage difference between the membranes. But when they do, you will see that this one will go.
This
is manual, eh? This is manual. It's not a system.
So how much power can this produce? Like of this?
Very few. Very few. It's just for.
But like how many watts?
Yeah, 2 watts or so.
2 watts. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's almost nothing. I hope I don't.
Is the right plug well?
I've lied to you.
There we go.
You just made blue energy.
This is so great.
Congratulations.
Rick Siebers is managing director of RedStack in the Netherlands. Michael van Ostrom is head of market development. Read more about RedStack and salinity gradient power at greenplanetmonitor.net. That's it for today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and Canada's Harbinger Media Network. Wherever or however you're listening, reading, or watching, please help us make the GPM happen. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. By the way, the guy behind this salty guitar is Dan Weisenberger. Thanks for your brilliant instrumental themes, Dan. I'm David Kattenberg, over and out for now.
Democracy Now!, hosted by award-winning independent journalist Amy Goodman. Tune in to your daily progressive news, aired Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on CJSF.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Below the surface of the Earth, deep reservoirs of steam and hot water provide a vast potential source of geothermal energy. This energy is used to generate electricity at some power plants in western states. But in most parts of the U.S., accessing geothermal requires deep drilling. That's long been a barrier to developing this renewable resource, technologically and financially.
But that has changed significantly in the past 10, 15 years, and that is related to the fact that we had a massive technology flourish in the oil and gas shale boom. So there were massive advancements in drilling technologies.
Jamie Beard is the founder of Project Interspace, a nonprofit working to grow the geothermal industry.
These technologies that were developed over the last 10 or 15 years, when transferred into geothermal, can massively reduce cost, also speed up the process of drilling, and allow us to drill places that we weren't able to drill before. That is an asset that we need to be leveraging.
So her group is working to bring renewable energy advocates and funders together with fossil fuel companies. She says bridging the gap between these often polarized groups could spur the rapid development of this clean and renewable energy source. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.